Welcome back to Dear Justice 2, or as we're calling it these days, View from the Couch. I'm here with, this is Rich, of course, and with me, as always, or at least in the last couple of weeks, playing the role of Jen is Paul Monahan.
Right. Yes. And from this second right on,
oh, yeah.
Please feel free to refer to me just as Jennifer or
Right.
Jen. Like, whatever you call her, you could call me because legally, psychologically, et cetera, I am Jen.
Be careful what you wish for.
And as noted before, following the end of this recording, there will once again be a very quick divorce.
Yep.
And then everything will work out, right?
A magical annulment, as
a
it were.
magic, yeah.
Enacted by me or whatever.
A whirlwind romance that ended as fast as it started.
We'll just pick up where we left off next time we're recording, man. We'll do. Well, today, though, we are talking about 28 Weeks Later. It is a sequel to 28 Days Later. This was your first time watching it, right?
This is the first time I've seen this movie. Yep.
Okay, yeah. I saw this because I love 28 Days Later so much. When I heard they were going to make 28 Weeks Later, I saw this in the theaters. I
oh,
went
yeah?
to the theater to see this one, yeah. And when I first saw it, I was pretty happy with it. I was pretty happy with it. I thought, okay, this is pretty good. Subsequent watchings revealed this to be the lesser, obviously, of the two films, in my opinion. But now watching it, I think I might have found like a nugget in here this time through that I really wasn't paying attention to the last time. And I find myself doing this with movies that Alex Garland has a hand in, is that there's always going to be a moment where you're going to realize what the movie's about. It happened to me with Civil War. I'm not going to spoil for anybody on the air, but there's a moment where a character, and it was literally an aha moment for me, where I thought, oh, that's what this is about. That's what this movie's about. Okay, I gotcha. I mean, and it doesn't even occur until much later in the movie. And I think I had that here in this with this viewing, with this movie. This, okay, so totally new cast, totally new director, totally new writer, with the exception of Alex Garland and I guess a ghost rewrite of the film.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I guess he did some rewrites, as I understand it. I don't know what he was involved in as far as the writing part of it, but he's a producer, so obviously he and Danny Boyle are producers. They have input. So it stars Robert Carlyle and Imogene Poots, which is a great name.
I did take a note that the two kids, Macintosh Muggleton,
yes,
and Imogen Poots, have just the perfect British names.
They do, right?
Like, you and I sometimes text each other back and forth,
right?
Like made up Harry Potter names or
Yes.
whatever.
Yeah.
And like these two names could easily have been in our fake texts to each other.
Especially Macintosh Muggleton. I
Yes,
mean,
like
that is
100%.
that's a
Like,
Harry Potter name.
yes. Yeah.
I mean, it's even got the word muggle in it, right?
It's even got the word muggle in it. I mean, come on. Yeah.
Man. But okay, so then, and then we also have, was it Rose Byrne and
Rose
Idris
Byrne.
Elba and Jeremy Renner?
Jeremy Renner, pre Hurt Locker, Jeremy Renner.
Pre Hurt Locker, pre everything, basically. But
basically, yeah.
I think the only other thing that I had seen him in was a Jeffrey Dahmer, like TV movie of the week thing that he had done. Yeah. Where he played Dahmer, and he was pretty good in it before he was a star. And then we've got Harold Perrineau in there, who I mean, I recognize him. He's like a character actor. He's everywhere.
Yeah,
right?
he's been great. He was in the second and third Matrix movies.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I really liked him in those.
That's right. He was in Baz Luhrmann's Romeo plus Juliet adaptation. He played Mercutio, I think.
Mm.
But yeah, he's good in everything. He was in Oz. Did you ever watch the show Oz, the HBO show?
No.
I watched like half of that show, and I thought he was probably the best thing out of it. But he's a really good actor. So I was kind of surprised to see him in this, although, I mean, it was early 2000s, so whatever, I guess. So the basic plot, we've got Robert Carlyle's character, Don, hiding out in a cottage with his wife in this prologue that we get. And it's very obviously the previous, like, set supposed to it the way it came off to me, it felt like it was set in the 28 days later time frame of this infection process.
Mm.
And I
That's
think
interesting because my first thought was This is 28 weeks later, and they're living like it's just happening right now. Has
Right,
there been
yeah.
another outbreak or whatever? I didn't put it together, and I didn't until they showed 28 weeks later on the screen. I
Oh,
was
sure,
like,
yeah.
oh, this is that was during the original outbreak.
Yeah.
Because I wrote down before I saw that, I wrote down who's your candle guy? How do you have so many candles for so long? Right? How do you make wax?
28 weeks
But
later, you've got
yeah,
no candles left. They've
no
all been burned
candles.
down. Yeah. No, I this opening sequence, this opening scene from the discussion setting up, the kids are in Spain or they're out, or at least in mainland Europe, and they believe them to be okay. But like, as I'm watching this film this time, I'm thinking, because I just watched 28 Days Later, Selena says that there was reports, or there were, excuse me, reports of infection on mainland Europe, infection in the United States. So those kids are not necessarily okay. They just think they are. Yeah. So I mean, it's an interesting setup for anyone who remembers or just recently watched 28 Days Later and who
That's one of
doesn't know what's going
those,
on with this.
yeah, that's one of those things too, where like, and we talked about this last time, but part of my brain when I watch these movies is the logistics of things, right? So, like, if an outbreak happens in mainland Europe, what did they do not to be obliterated by it? Like, how was mainland Europe not obliterated the way that the UK was or Britain
Lot
was,
more
right?
people on mainland Europe too.
Right. It seems like a lot more fertile virus ground, right? To yeah. So yeah, I mean it's kind of a low information environment. Although I think this movie was higher information for the viewer than 28 Days Later,
This one
right?
didn't,
Because they've got more like more people telling you things and more stuff like, there's more explanation going on of things.
There's even a timeline for the infection and like how this all gets set up, which I mean I kind of appreciated, but I think I like the ambiguity of it and this idea that like what I liked about like Don and Alice not knowing that the kids were probably in danger is that you have this idea of communications are down. You only know what you know, and you only know like you only have access to that information. You don't have access to the information that other people might have, like say Selena, who was living in the same country, but they're, miles and miles or kilometers and kilometers apart. There's no way they know what's going on. There's no way they could share that information. I appreciated the that it kind of felt a little disoriented, that you don't have like those normal like luxuries of instant gratification on with your phone, right?
The like I think that might be one of the biggest changes that would happen were there to be a rage virus thing today. Like, I think easily for my brain, the biggest adjustment would be not having a fire hose of information spraying at my eyeballs all day long, right? Easily the biggest difference brain wise. Obviously, you'd have a lot to deal with, survival wise, but brain wise, everyone has become very accustomed to like having the information you need exactly when you need it, right? Like it would feel like such a fucking chore to figure out so many things. Because I'd be like I'd go in my like let's just say the rage virus happens, I'm a survivor, the virus is over, but like everything is shattered, right? So I go in my backyard and I'm like, okay, I gotta get some firewood or whatever. Like, so how do I do anything, right? Because like if that happened, if I'm just me now, no rage virus outbreak, I go in my backyard and I get a wild hare to like chop a tree down and get some firewood from it, I would just fucking look up on YouTube how to chop a tree down and get firewood from it, right? I wouldn't have to figure it out, But now it would go back to like, you have to figure everything out because you can't get any more information. You know what I mean? Like, you can't stand on the shoulders of giants anymore if information hose is cut off, right?
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. I hadn't even thought of the implications that far out, but you're right. Like even the most minuscule of things
I don't know how to do
If you don't,
anything.
yeah, if you don't know how to do it, you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't
And
be able to
I'd
figure it out.
like if I figured out something, it would be like anybody who knew how to do that thing for real would like make a backpack journey to my house and be like, "What the fuck are you doing?" Right? Like that's how you're getting water, you dummy. You know what I mean? Just whatever the case may be, it'd be like I'd be like, "Well, I don't know how to do it." You know what
Look, dude, I'm in computers. There are no more
That
computers. What do you want from me?
nobody's paying my salary to like type code in a screen anymore, so what the fuck am I supposed to do? Yeah.
So at first I thought that is kind of an interesting, you know, setup. But now with like further discussion here, like that would be just a huge burden, right? Like,
What wouldn't it be great if there was like, so instead of like,
oh
instead of back in
no.
the day, you'd have like a merchant with like salt and cured meats and whatever in their covered wagon and stuff. You'd have like a guy with like a solar thing collecting power for a printer, and he could print off stuff for you from his like he downloaded Wikipedia before everything went bad. Right. So you'd be like, here comes the Wikipedia man. And you go up to him and you're like, can I get something on, you know, anarcho-syndicalism? You know, what does Wikipedia have to say about that? You'd pay him like two pigskins or whatever, and he'd print off the last updated thing of that, you know.
That's really funny because it reminds me of a South Park bit where the internet went down and everybody was lost without the internet.
Yeah.
And they were in like this camp, the survivors, quote unquote, were in this camp, and Randy wanted to they had a computer that had like a tiny bit of internet. They had like a really tenuous connection to, you know, like the internet. It was really slow or whatever. And he wanted to use the computer to look at porn, but they wouldn't let him. So he went to he as he's like leaving, this guy pulls him aside and he's like, "Hey man, you want internet porn?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Come step right in here." And he sits down and it's just like this cardboard box with like a hole cut out of it, like it was a monitor. And he's like, and the guy's like, "Just tell the computer whatever you want. You just have to say it out loud." And he's like, and he'd say like he'd say shit like, you know, redhead horse porn, and like somebody would draw it really quick and hold the picture down in the and that's what I was thinking when you're talking about the Wikipedia guy, that like if there's a Wikipedia guy, there has to be an internet porn guy, right? Like
Well,
he's got
that was
like
what I was thinking about that too, because as soon as I said Wikipedia guy, I was in the same thing. Like, you got to get all your major like things that you're still accustomed to, like your Twitter guy, right? Now you just have a guy who just comes to a certain area, he yells into a megaphone all of the tweets that he has in his thing, and then he collects tweets from people in the local area to take to the next town
He just
where he
writes
can
them down
yell
on
all the
paper.
yeah, he can yell and you can just shout retweet him or whatever,
Right,
right?
that's one retweet
That's one
here, and
retweet
oh, you want to? Okay, another retweet here. And he's got a guy that goes with him that like collects the money for each of the retweets and the comments and shit. Oh, you want to? Okay, remember, only get 140 characters now, so. He's still limiting them to 140 characters because that'll be up. He's like, we got to have it feel that way.
He's only got that much papyrus with him
Right?
that he's made from grass he's found or whatever.
There's going to be a Google Maps guy too, right? But he's just a
Yeah,
dude with an
but
atlas.
just he's just drawing stuff from his atlas. Yeah.
Takes out like tracing paper, traces it. Point A, point B. Here you go. You want turn by turn directions? That's extra.
Turn by turn to like the latrine near you or whatever. Yeah. Turn. And then
Extra, fuck it, I'll just piss right here.
you can say restaurants in this area, you know what I mean? He'll just make up stuff, right, and put it on the map, you know.
You're like, there's a Red Robin down the
There's
block.
a
Here,
Red
look at
Rabbit,
this.
yeah.
See? It is on the map. Yeah. Just pulled that right off the internet.
So then it would go on for like years and years and years.
Yeah.
So you'd have this network of just like wandering internet minstrels, right, who do these things, but no more internet. So that, like, you know, skip ahead a few generations, nobody would even know what the real
Right.
Twitter was like at
Right,
all.
right, right.
They would just be, oh yeah, Twitter. That's the guy who shows up every month, and we shout things at him that he shouts to other people later on his journey, right?
That's fantastic. They just call him Twitter too. They don't like it's not
Yeah.
like the Twitter guy. His name
He
is
just
now
becomes
Twitter, right?
Twitter. Yeah.
Who is that? That's Twitter. He picks up all
Twitter.
my information. Who's that guy? That's Wikipedia. He
That's
just
Wikipedia.
tells you about anything. Just ask him. He'll find that information
Yeah.
for you and boom, you got it. Like he printed it all out and like he's got
But
like
then,
these tomes that he's got in this cart that he
yeah,
wheels behind him.
the Wikipedia guy couldn't do stuff too long because, like, all the printers these days, like, lock you down if you don't have all the cyan cartridges in them, you know what I mean?
Oh
So like he'd be printing black and white, and he'd run out of his yellow cartridge, and the
yeah.
printer would refuse to go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he'd be done. He had to be like hand drawing all the stuff from Wikipedia
Man, we've just created a whole new workforce
too,
of people trying to recreate the internet in
Recreate the
the apocalypse.
internet.
See, they don't think these things through in the
You gotta
movies at
think
all.
through it,
Yeah,
guys. You gotta think through it.
there's important questions that need
What's the most
answers.
important thing? Still tweeting.
Right. Pornhub.
Yeah, because you could have the Pornhub guy, but it's just like people drawing
Right.
crude pictures of stuff and giving them
Yeah.
to him
Yeah,
so he
yeah.
can give them to other people like later on. You know
Yeah, he's gonna forward it. Like
what
he ties it to a pigeon and sends it off to get
I
his buddy. He's like, oh man, ooh, look at that. My buddy just forwarded me an email. Or P-mail, pigeon mail, right? P-mail.
Ah. But then, okay, yeah. So then, that but see, that'd be perfect though, because then you would get stuck, right? Because the way I feel about myself now is that I basically can't actually do anything
Yeah.
because of the internet.
Right.
And so, if I still had it, but in that form, like, would we ever reinvent the things that could make it better, or would we all just get stuck in like doing that, but with carriages, right? Because the the Isaac Newton, the Tim Berners-Lee, the whoever else who
Right.
like the new generation version of that would never arise because everyone's just doing Twitter by a horse carriage
Right.
and not like studying math and stuff like that to get better at real stuff.
Oh no. We've ruined humanity.
Twitter ruined ha humanity more than we even knew.
Right. Jesus. Oh my God. That's fucking great, dude. Like now I'm not going to be able to get like anytime there's an apocalypse movie, I'm going to be thinking about a dude with like a solar panel on a stick wandering around. Hey man, you want a tweet? I got a tweet for you. You want to see tweets? Who do you want to hear tweets from?
You want to get a Wikipedia page?
Yeah, man. I got Wikipedia. I got tweets. I got Facebook. You want Facebook? You don't look old enough for Facebook. You want tweet Facebook though? No? How about a TikTok? And he just has some dude following around that just does weird fucking dances. You want TikTok? You get TikTok right here. TikTok's extra because it's banned here. I don't want you to know about it. This is okay. So that's how it's going to happen, right? They're going to ban TikTok and all of technology is going to fall apart. And then there's going to be people wandering around just doing people just
Just
randomly
doing,
doing dances on the streets, right?
yeah.
Yeah, let's get back to the let's get back to
And that's
the
what happens in 28 weeks later.
movie. There's a dude named Twitter who wanders around. So these, okay, so this cottage scene is really fucking good, right? Like
Yeah.
this bust out scene where the kid, when the kid arrives, you know some shit's gonna go down, right? They're
Yeah,
chasing
it's
me.
like,
So like,
sorry, bro.
I'm with Don on this. Don't open the fucking door. I mean, I'm sorry, kid, but you're putting all these other people's lives in danger for one person, right? Which I guess makes me an asshole, but
I wrote this down is that I think maybe one of the reasons I get stuck in the logistics of things, of these things, is the moments like letting the kid in, or like later when they find the mom again.
Yeah.
Like taking her in or not taking her in, you know,
Right.
all these things are kind of sort of just trolley problems,
That's a good point. Yeah. Yep.
right? Because like let's just say you're like you are Don and you're like, everybody in here shut the fuck up. Let that kid get taken by the monsters, and they will be none the wiser that we're here, and they'll all run screaming off to somewhere else, and we'll be okay. Versus taking that risk of like, let him in, but then some random monster sees him go in there and wants to now break into the house, right? Like, and then just every sort of logistical problem after that is kind of a trolley problem, right? Because when Jeremy Renner steps out of the car to push the car, like they're you're taking a risk, but he's calculating it based on one of these kids might have the cure in their genes. So even if I have to like go and risk getting shot, burned, whatever, I'm like doing this for the good of whoever else, right?
The betterment of all.
The betterment of all, right? And then just, extrapolate that from all of the choices that like the US Army makes when they bring people in and they have lockdowns and code reds and all that kind of stuff. Like everything is when the threat of something is so real and in your face and could not be more stark, then every moment is kind of a trolley problem moment of I could do the absolute safest thing for everybody, but sometimes that means keeping my kid locked out of the house when the monsters are coming and the monsters take my kid,
Shit. Okay,
but then everybody else
when
lives,
if
right?
it's your kid, it's a different story, right?
Right.
If it's
Well, I
else's kid, I
mean,
don't
that's one
know.
of the variants of the trolley problem, right? Is that like if you see the trolley coming down the track and you're standing at the switch and there's five people tied to the track on the thing it's going to, and there's your kid, your one kid, tied to the other track, do you throw the switch or don't throw the switch? Do you point it toward your kid or do you point it toward the people? Now, I'm not asking you to answer that question because I don't know. I don't even know how I would answer it. Because either way, I would just probably want to kill myself either way, right?
It's the old Kobayashi Maru question, right?
Yeah.
Like the unsolvable problem.
Except, yeah, unsolvable,
They're
but not, but you're still forced to make a choice of some kind. Yeah.
You're making a choice, but there's no right or wrong, really. There's
There's no, and
only
there's kind of no way to come out ahead at all. There's only degrees of being behind or degrees of shit,
Being an asshole, degrees of assholery.
Yeah. So I guess that's just like, that's part of the logistical problem playing for me in every zombie movie is whenever you see somebody act stupid, you're like, I got a trolley problem that guy now. I got to throw him out because he's the one who's stupid. Even if they kill him, like, I mean, you don't have to, but like, that's the weight you have to, the moral weight you have to think about in these things.
That's a good point. It's a really good point. They do let the kid in though. And he says he was coming from Sanford, which is the name of the village in Hot Fuzz.
Oh, really? I
Also,
forgot.
I did some research. I looked at it and I was like, why did they name it Sanford? Is it just a little dig at Hot Fuzz because they made a dig at, at 28 Days Later in Shaun of the Dead? Maybe. Who knows? But Sanford is a standard police name for a town that they set up to do training in.
Oh, really?
In England. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I found that interesting anyway.
Huh.
So
Interesting.
the other trolley problem here then is Don chooses not to save Alice.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
In the moment when I first was watching it, in that very moment, I had two thoughts. My one thought is like, this is going to come back to haunt him. But also, I was like, in that moment, I was like, I don't know what I would do. But I had forgotten that they have kids out there. And so if you're Don in the bathroom and the zombies are like, getting at your spouse in the bedroom where the bathroom is, and you have a chance to break free, you are in some sense saying, I value the chance of seeing our kids again more than the chance of saving you. Because I'm likely to die if I try to save you. And if there were no kids involved, maybe it's a different decision. But like, I think he makes that choice because of his kids.
I never thought of that at all. That's so okay. So following that train of thought, do you think Alice would be okay with his decision if she knew that that's why she made the decision? That way their kids wouldn't be parentless when they came back from Spain or whatever.
I think that's a possibility because when they are reunited later, she just says she loves him.
Yeah, she forgives
She
him.
doesn't excoriate him for the choice he makes.
Right.
And I think it's maybe because, like, because you would have to, like, she had 28 weeks to think about that stuff, right?
Yeah. While she was living in a feral state.
While she was more or less feral. But she made it back to their old house too.
Yeah.
But I think the instant she saw her kids is probably the instant she's like, I forgive you.
Yeah.
Because he, like if you have 28 weeks to think about it, you could probably come to the conclusion of like, or at least one of the options is my darling spouse ran away because our kids are elsewhere, and there is an off chance that we can see them again
Yeah.
because we think they're still alive. We think they are safe.
Right.
And I am like 95% not safe in
Right.
this moment, right?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna make it,
Right.
probably. Right.
Right.
So,
The kids have a better chance. He needs to be there for the kids. Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's, I think that's why, I think that's why, because. I know I'm jumping ahead here, but like
That's okay. We too.
when
Welcome
they're
to the show.
reunited and she's like strapped down on the gurney thing,
Yeah.
and he kind of he like lets himself into all the doors to go see her.
Yeah.
I was like, how is this gonna go?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know coming in whether she would have forgiven him, but she's just like, I love you. You know, she and then they smooch it up.
Yeah.
And like so I think that was part of the reason how they got to like this. That was part of this, just the story engineering of getting an infection back into place, right?
Yeah.
Is some smart story engineering of, yeah, we can let them smooch it up a little bit because she's found a way to forgive him. And then saliva is a transmission method. And then, and so on and so on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think that was a really smart way of doing it. I
Yeah.
had this thought when maybe I'll save that for later when we get to it, but
Sure.
okay, so
Yeah. Okay.
The siege of the cottage made me think of the end of 28 Days Later,
Yeah.
right? Where the infected were kind of pursuing people around the cot or the mansion or whatever. But I think what really sells this is when Don makes it out of the cottage and he's running and there's the infected chasing him, you get this. I got really like anxious watching that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, he's just a movie character. I'm not like 100% invested in that. But putting yourself in that position, and I think making him having to make that decision puts you in that spot with him right
Yeah.
there. And so
Yeah.
you're with him on his journey, running away from these infected and running to that boat. I think that's what really kind of sells this movie in the way that it's shot and in the way that it is. Well, it feels a lot more kinetic than 28 Days Later. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. It really does.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So, yeah. So Don makes his way to London. Apparently, we learn later he kind of makes his way to London. He ends up at a checkpoint and they ended up taking him in. But 28 days later, 28 days after that scene is when the infected have started to die off. They are starving to death. In the following weeks after that, we get a NATO force that is led by the US that declares mainland Britain to be free from infection, and then they start rebuilding it, and then they start repopulating it at the 28 week mark. That's
Yeah,
where we're at.
yeah.
That's where this movie then jumps to. And the Don's kids come back. He tells them
Yeah.
this abridged version of the story. He does not tell them the full truth about what happened to their mother. And the kids take off that night because the younger one, Andy, is worried that he's not going to remember what his mom looked like.
Yeah.
And so they go looking for, they go looking, they go back to the house to look for photographs, and instead they
Yeah.
find her. So that catches us up there.
I did not see that coming.
The mom still being
The
alive?
mom. I did not see that coming at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I what a larger opinion of the movie aside, probably, that was a really cool thing, I think.
It's an
Really
interesting
cool,
twist, yeah.
really cool in terms of like I just assumed that you were supposed to feel this dread watching her disappear from the window in the early scene of like, oh,
Yeah.
she got ripped up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's what I thought was gonna
She's
be.
infected now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they flip that on its head with her. When I think the first time I watched it, I remember thinking to myself, what the fuck is wrong with her? She's squeezing him
Yeah.
so tight that he's hurting. I think
Yeah.
what I like about that is that it leaves the audience not knowing what the fuck's going on,
Yeah.
because that's where they cut. They cut from that to like her
Yeah.
being brought in. And I'm thinking to myself, holy shit, is she like a calm infected here? Is that what's going on? But
I was like, is I was like, are we starting to like really, deepen this rage metaphor with like real rage in humans of like, oh,
yeah.
she is in control of the rage somehow,
Right,
right?
right, right, right. Yeah.
She retains her humanity and the rage is just there too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, what are we saying now about this? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting way to progress that without just kind of rehashing everything, although they do rehash a lot of different things in this movie.
Yeah.
But I think it's an interesting progression for that. The idea that there might be someone who could be a carrier but is immune, so that then their ability to control that rage in a way, metaphorically,
Yeah.
is kind of center at that point. Which brings me to my point that I was going to make a couple minutes ago. Now that we've got Alice back and Don goes to apologize to her, try and reconcile with her, I had this feeling, like this moment where I think it was a shot of her face as she's looking at him before she says, I love you. And I thought she hates him. Like she is full of rage towards him. But she's strapped down. What else can she do? If she tells him she loves him, she knows that she's got the virus in her. She knows that she can get back at him. Is this Alice's revenge? A poorly calculated revenge because she ends up paying for it with her life, but do you think that there's a possibility in some world that maybe Alice intentionally forgave him so that he would kiss her and get infected as payback for what he did to her? Is that the evolution of that rage too?
That's an interesting question. Because part of it ties into to like the how much of your faculties remain when you have this stuff, right? Because if your goal is vengeance against this person who hurt you, are you willing to potentially sacrifice hundreds of thousands more people through that vengeance?
Including
But
your
if you,
kids, yeah.
including your kids, maybe too, right?
Oh shit, I didn't think of that.
But maybe you're mind is clouded by the rage stuff and you can't think that far, right? Maybe she's on a balance somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Because it seems like she is on a balance because she clutches her son like
Yeah.
hard, right? Like
Right.
there's still like she's not perfectly her old self.
Yeah.
The rage virus is there, but it's like on simmer,
Yeah,
right?
there you go. Sure.
And so that's a really good like because she has maybe she has reduced faculties, but she still has revenge top of mind. That would be the way to get him to be close enough
Yeah.
to infect him. Does she know that she is like a carrier of it? Does she know that she could infect people? Because okay, so
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I don't know about that.
here's this.
Yeah.
If she believes that she can infect people, even hugging her son at the beginning there, or when they find her again, is a huge risk. But again, maybe her faculties are reduced and she can't think about that.
Sure. Or maybe I'm
And
reading
they
too much
don't,
into it.
yeah, and
That's
yeah, maybe
entirely
we're reading too
possible
much
too.
into it too,
Yeah.
but yeah, I don't know.
It's just a it's a thought that I had. It was a momentary thought where like because I think it's the way that she looks at him and then realizing what happened and realizing that she kind of miscalculated that. If I put that overlay, like okay, so you know how like back in the day you had those overhead projectors where you could put like
You put that
a
thing
piece
on and
of
you
thing in
scribble on it, yeah.
the yeah. So if you put that overlay on there of this is Alice's revenge, it kind of fits, but it's off
It
kilter a
does.
little bit with that with
Yeah.
the idea that she put her kids in danger too.
Yeah.
Although maybe she's thinking, well, he's never going to get out of there because there's soldiers out in front of
Because there's
in front of
soldiers and
the
it's a locked room and all this kind of stuff.
So maybe that was
Yeah.
the calculation, but I don't know. I think you can, I think you could if you wanted to read it either way. I don't know where I fall on it, honestly, but it was just something that popped into my head. Meanwhile, we get to meet this these NATO squad that is basically patrolling London, and they spend a lot of time spying on people. There is a lot of surveillance footage used in this film. There is a lot of these
The
guys
sniper
looking through
guys just look in the
scopes. Yeah.
windows.
Yep. Looking in the windows and spying on people. They have nicknames for people. And I immediately think of post 9/11 reaction where you give up some freedom for a sense of security. And the freedom that you're giving up here, and which is very similar to what we gave up, is that now we're all being surveilled at all times. And you know, we have this sense of security or false sense of security. And I feel like that is what they're commenting here. That's the commentary there. What do you think? Like, what do you think of that bent or that take?
I hadn't thought about that from the security, giving up your freedom in the name of security,
Yeah.
or your right not to be surveilled in the name of security. Hadn't thought about that because it's very tempting, right?
Yeah.
Because it, I mean, it's exactly the environment that 9/11 sets up, in that you like many people, many people are like, yeah, we need these things in place to be safe from whatever, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I didn't think about the angle.
And that's one of the things that I thought about a lot watching this movie on subsequent watches. I think it's not a fully fleshed out. I feel like they didn't stick to their guns with that theme throughout the movie because later it gets dropped once the one sniper, once Jeremy Renner's character Doyle abandons his post, they drop the whole seeing through the sniper scope or watching on surveillance footage of anything, you know, anything going on.
But there, so yeah, but also, so but this, you bring up a good theme though, because at some point when the dad gets infected and breaks out of that room and starts infecting other people, and then there's like a mass panic and people are running. At first, the snipers are told, target the rage monsters. But then they are told, target everybody.
Right, rather quickly, in fact.
Rather quickly, right? Which also has that feel of like collateral damage is okay. Like in for us in the US, for the citizens of Iraq and Afghanistan, we decided, like it or not, that their collateral deaths were okay compared to what we thought about, the 9/11 situation, right? I mean, that's a, actually, that's, yeah, I think that fits in there too.
Yeah, that fits really well, actually. I didn't think about that. The idea of the collateral damage definitely clicks into place.
Like it's okay to do this because we're serving some broader purpose here. You know what I mean?
Well, that's another theme in this movie is the idea that well, if I'm gonna go all Star Trek on it, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one, right? Jeremy Renner's character makes that sacrifice because he's told, hey, these kids are more important than anything, any other person's life because they may have the cure. Yeah, that's interesting. That scene that you were talking about where Don gets infected and then infects a whole bunch of people in that enclosed room, they lock those people in that like panic room when they find out that there's an infection spreading. Did it come off to you like the story that Mark told about how,
Yeah, where just a wave went through people.
it just went like it spread like wildfire? And then later, because Scarlet is going to grab Tammy and Andy and try to make her way out of the city to safety, she loses contact with them, much like Mark lost contact with his mom and his, or his dad and his sister. I don't think it's exact, but I think they wanted to show something like, because that is a pretty harrowing image or an eye or thought, right? And I think it actually fits really well in this. But that scene where all these people are becoming infected and it's spreading like literally like wildfire, like Mark said from the first movie, is pretty unsettling. It's pretty terrifying. Like, how do you get out of that? You're locked in. They locked them in. I think that was an effective scene. So,
Absolutely, because like so I had two thoughts while you were saying this.
yeah.
One is that the code red locked in the room scene, very effective too. Also, I mean, some of that was carrying some of the themes that like essentially all zombie movies carry, the theme that like we're not so different from them,
Yeah,
right? In
true.
certain ways, because even before the infection started spreading through them, they were like hot and furious and shouting and raging, right? Rage was already there even before the infection
Oh, dude,
was
yeah.
spreading through them, right?
Dude, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Like, this, I mean, yeah. So there's that. But then also, you were talking about callbacks or like nods to the previous story.
Yeah.
The other sort of gruesome nod that I saw, which fits into the theme we discussed last time, was that when Don smooches Alice and then he catches the rage virus, he attacks her and then he finishes her off by gouging her eyes out with his thumbs, which is exactly what Jim did
That's right.
in the first movie when he was metaphorically and physically, I suppose, a rage zombie,
Right.
right? Like that was
Rage Ninja.
Rage Ninja. Yeah, he was extra rage Batman, right?
Extra Rage Batman.
Which was like, to me it was a callback in to our to the theme we discussed of like, yeah, at that point, Jim in that movie, he was no different than the rage zombies. He was that. And also too that like that when the rage takes over, it shuts off everything else. He had just smooched this woman because he missed her so much, and then the virus took him and he chomped her to bits and he gouged her eyes out like on the fucking gurney.
Insanity. Something else that I thought was interesting here is we don't get a reason for Doyle to leave his post. He doesn't tell anybody why he left. He's like, I'm not fucking doing this. I'm done. Right. And he says, I'm leaving. So what I found interesting about that on this viewing in particular is that it allowed me to kind of inhabit that role a little bit. Why would I leave? Why would I not do that? It gives me this chance to kind of maybe imprint on this character and use him as an end to the story almost. So I like that we don't get a reason for that, for Doyle's departure from his mission. But him being the final piece of the puzzle, and he's still just following orders, right? Like he's like, okay, well, I guess if that's what I got to do, that's what I got to do. When Scarlet tells him, you've got to make sure that you take care of these kids, even if your life is forfeit, he just shrugs and is like, all right, that's what we're doing, I guess. So still, even with this decision to leave his charge post, he is still following orders. He's still following instructions of other people.
Right. I think
You know?
at some point it becomes the like this was talked about at some point during the last 15 years. I forget when, but like some high up military dude, one of the joint chiefs or secretaries of the whatever was talking about, I forget what, but they were saying essentially like it's your duty to disobey an immoral order, right? And
Okay.
something like that.
Yeah. I seem to remember that too. Yeah.
Yeah, something, it was something to that effect. I'm sure it wasn't that those words, but
Right.
and I think maybe the character thought that they didn't do a good job of explaining it, but to me that's what the character thought, was like, it's my duty to disobey an order that's like crazy. But
Yeah.
why he still regarded himself as a military dude, right? He still was in contact with folks. He still recognized that Rose Byrne's character was, I think, a superior officer to him, right? So
Major, yeah, he's a sergeant.
yeah. So he still would take orders and listen or whatever. But for that, for the let loose all the cannons on all the people, he was like, no, I'm not doing that, because of it's an immoral order of some kind.
That's interesting. I hadn't even thought of that moment, that comment that had been made years and years ago about not following an immoral order.
Because you remember that too,
I do
some
remember
form
that
of
it,
that. I don't remember who talked about it. I don't remember what it was, but like somebody talked about that somehow.
it clicked. It clicked in my brain. I remember hearing about that. I didn't even make, I didn't put two and two together because I haven't thought of that in years until you just brought it up now. So the other part of this Code Red thing is they don't just kill everybody that they can kill. They firebomb the entire city, or at least the Isle of Dogs. And then they gas it as well. Like, holy shit. Like, complete
They
and
mean
utter like
business.
meltdown. But even with all of that, infected still get out.
Like, I did. I went back to the logistics a little bit and I was like, I think you gotta nuke it. I think you gotta nuke it.
I wonder, okay, all right. You bring up a good point here, though. Wouldn't somebody have thought to themselves, maybe we just nuke whatever centers of population we have
I
to do,
mean,
and we're done. I mean, not that that's the right answer, just like
it's
somebody
hard
out
not to
there.
at least think about that logistically. You know what I mean? Like,
Politically speaking, it seems like it's almost political suicide to do something like that. But at this point, is politics even an issue? I mean, we've had people suggest nuking hurricanes. Somebody is going to think
somebody's
we'll
gonna be
nuke the
like, you know
infected.
what?
What if we just drop a bomb on them, right? I wonder, they're making 28 years later. We talked about that last episode. They're in the process of pre-production for that one. I wonder if they're going to bring that up. I wonder if they're going to fit that in somehow.
And I
Like maybe it's like this, the only solution to this is to completely obliterate it, right? Like there's not, even when they thought Britain was free of infection, it wasn't.
Yeah.
How can you be sure? You take off and you nuke the site from orbit. That is the only way to be sure. Ripley told us we knew.
That is actually interesting too, because I, again, back to logistics about these things. It's like I'm probably thinking too much into this,
No, that's the best part, man. What are you talking about?
but, or thinking too much about the, how many zombies could infect a town full of a million people if they had 8 days to whatever, right?
Average foot speed of a
If
zombie
what's her
is.
if what's her face, the mom, has a genetic condition that lets her survive the virus but still transmit it, and her son appears to have that same condition too, which I think is why the end is the way it is. But you would think that that is the vector for the virus to remain a thing, right? Because in other places, because clearly, at least both these movies, I think, suggest that there were other outbreaks. Maybe not as bad as Britain, but there were other outbreaks. And if there are people with that mutation sitting around who can like survive and be a carrier and not, maybe not, I don't know, maybe not even know, then is that the vector for the virus to just always be around, essentially?
Well, and then what about viral dormancy? Like there are some viruses that now, because of the polar ice caps melting or whatever, I heard that there's new viruses being released into the world. Like, What about that? Like, maybe that's the fucking 28 weeks later thing, that maybe that like 28 years later, or they've solved it, or they think they do, but it turns out that rage was always there and polarized got nothing or whatever. But no, I think what you're saying is makes sense. The idea that virus will be ever present because there are people who are going to carry it. I mean, you have, think about like the herpes virus. You have people that will have it but never show symptoms, and they can still transmit it. You know, AIDS is the same thing. You know, I mean, you can have it but never have symptoms, transmit it. You know, it's an interesting, I think you can. Shit, I hope I'm not talking out of line there. I think you can, but it's an interesting fuck. Like, it's never going to be over. This will never be over. Rage will never go away. Maybe that's the truth, right? Like, because I mean, really, rage is a human condition. It's
I
never going to go
mean,
away.
it's never going away. But the moral of the story is rage never goes away.
Drive angry because it's never going away. So, so the escape from London when they're firebombing everything and they get out, or they get out of the Isle, off the Isle of Dogs and into London proper. They have that trope of like running from the fire, blowing through the tunnel thing. I mean, I get it. I get it. It's actiony and all that, but I hate that trope. Like, that's one of
Me
my
too.
fucking hate that trope so much. That one
I
in
was watching it and I was like, come on.
like, yeah, they're not gonna outrun the blast, man. Come on, that's not how it
No.
works. That's like Jake Gyllenhaal running from cold in The Day After Tomorrow, or Mark Wahlberg running from the wind in The Happening. You like, guys, that's not how running works, you know? I mean, I hate to break it to you. So like, I like definitely knock like at least a half star down for using that shitty trope, because I don't like it. So they head towards Wembley Stadium, and Doyle gets in contact with Flynn, the helicopter pilot,
The helicopter
who
guy,
Mike Harold Perrineau's character. And he's like, no, I'm not taking civilians. You got to fucking dump them and meet me at the stadium. But Doyle is now off the rails. He's like, not going to ditch them, right? So they go looking for a car. And this is where we get the scene where Jeremy Renner makes the sacrifice to
Oh,
like go out into the.
before that, they're in like a park somewhere.
Yeah, with the
When
carousel and
Doyle
all
and
that.
Flynn, and the helicopter guy Flynn comes
Oh,
down and he
yeah.
almost lands, and then he does a thing that I'm like, come on, you guys. He uses the blades of the chopper to like slice up the horde of zombies, and I was like, there is no pilot in the world that would do that.
He
There's
would, yeah.
you would wreck your rotors, first of all.
Right.
Second of all, huge risk
Yeah.
for like, you know what I mean? You got to get those blades down like a couple feet off the ground as you're
Right.
doing that, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then like, if you're piloting the only thing out of there for those people, there's no way you'd be, there's no way.
No.
No pilot would ever do that.
It's action movie nonsense is what it is. And I came, if you're going to be the sequel to a movie that is actually very thoughtful and has a lot in it, whether or not it's a great movie or not, it actually has some thought process to it. And then you're going to be the action movie sequel to it. If you're going to use tropes like those, like that, like, oh, he's going to use the helicopter as a weapon, or they're going to run away from fire, you know, like, come on, man, you're losing me here in this part of the movie a little bit. They lost me a little bit with that. But yeah, that, and the dude, okay, so, the dude that runs there, because there's another survivor that manages to like escape with them, and he is so like anxious to leave, he goes and jumps on the little skid on the bottom of the chopper. When and he's on there, he's still holding on there when Flynn does the helicopter chop chop thing,
Chop
right?
chop, yeah.
He gets covered in gore. He's a monster now, right? He's got to be.
Yeah,
There's
he's
no
gotta
way he
be.
didn't get that in his mouth, right? The dude's got to be a rage monster, and I don't think they show that. Like, why wouldn't they show that? That would be a cool. I could forgive the little chop chop thing if he turned into a rage
If
monster
it
and now
made
you
him a
got to
rage
deal with
monster,
that. You're like, okay, well, that makes sense, right? No, but they don't even bother with that. He's just done. Yeah. But so they, okay. So now we're back to the getting in the car. The car won't start. The nerve gas now after the bombing is seeping in. But not only the nerve gas, now they've got people on foot in full-on containment suits with flamethrowers to torch anything that moves. Like that is scorched fucking earth kind of
I
mentality,
mean,
right?
doubly scorched almost at that point.
Yeah, right. You already dropped fire on
Scorched
them.
the scorchings. But also, like, is again one of those, again, back to the logistics of things or whatever. Like, I'm glad you have suits that protect you from the gas. But you could just go after the gas has passed,
Sure. Yeah.
right? Or you
Makes
could
sense.
be total cool badasses and be torching stuff in the midst of the poison gas,
Right, slowly
right?
appearing out of the gas as like a specter with a flamethrower,
Like
you know.
hurting your own ability to do it safely
Right.
because you're shrouded with the poison gas.
Yeah. It's sacrificing safety for looking cool, right?
For awesomeness. A sacrifice I would always make, except I never do because I never look awesome.
I don't look awesome doing anything.
I don't look awesome doing anything.
I in fact look less awesome trying to do anything, in fact. Yeah. So Doyle, he makes the sacrifice. He goes out and like they don't even give him a chance. They just fucking firebomb him.
I don't understand that because,
He's
like,
in a military uniform. He's not acting like a Rage Virus monster or whatever.
I cannot believe that their orders would be like torch everything, including non-rage monsters.
Right.
Like, if you see a baby in a carriage that's not a rage monster, you better torch that little fucker.
Yeah.
You
Light
better torch
that
it.
fucker on fire, man. Do it. Throw fire on that baby. Yeah. But his sacrifice allows them to get the car started. And they flee the bullets that are flying at them into the underground, the subway, the British tube system, as it were, where Scarlett, Tammy, and Andy are chased by Don. Now, suddenly, Don is the shark from Jaws. Why is he going after? Why is Don specifically going after his kids?
The only thing I could think of in that moment was like, this is like, is this too much payback for running away during the first scene? Like, is his payback being a rage monster who tries to k eat his kids, essentially?
Yeah.
That's kind of wild.
And it doesn't track. It doesn't make sense. That because none of the other infected act this way. You know, like none of them. There's not a single other infected that's done this. And there's no explanation for it.
Because like most of the Rage Monsters stuff is like, I wrote this down. The Rage Monsters are Forrest Gump. They are like
You're gonna have to explain that one, dude.
everywhere I went, I was running. Like, they don't do anything but like sprint like madmen toward anything. Right? And Don is a little bit more like, I'm hunting these people. You know what I mean? Like, as soon as he catches a whiff of anything, he should be like screaming, running, whatever, like a crazy person,
You would
essentially.
think, yeah. But in this
So it's
case,
a little weird.
he's Jason from Friday the 13th.
Yeah, he's a little
He's
more
just stalking them.
stalky.
Which I don't understand it, and I don't know why. And it bothers me that it's him that they encounter at the end. It could have just as well been any other person, except that they wanted to have this cathartic moment where Tammy shoots him, you know? So Scarlett gets murdered. Tammy kills Don, but not before Don bites Andy. And then we get to see Andy's eye do the thing where it looks like he's got rage virus eyes, but he's not enraged. And then Tammy and Andy walk the rest of the way to Wembley Stadium. They are picked up by Flynn, and Flynn flies them across the English Channel to France. And 28 days later, they love throwing 28 days later. That's like they throw that in everywhere. Like everything happens like almost a month after the
On
thing
a
that you were
scale of
watching.
28s,
Yeah. It's weird. So 28 days later, though, we find Flynn's abandoned chopper in Paris, just as a herd of infected are kind of surging through the Paris metro system And it becomes apparent that the infection has now spread to mainland Europe, continental Europe.
Which
Now,
it had before at some point too,
that's my
is
question.
yeah.
That's my question. The previous movie sets up pretty clearly that there had been reports of infection in other areas of the world. I don't know how this fits in to the mythology that the first film sets up. And
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it too much, but if you're going to tell me that in the first 28 days of the infection, before everything went down, they knew that there was infection elsewhere, then you can't go back on that and later say, well, not Europe. Even though we said Paris, not Europe, not Spain where the kids were, or not Paris until we get there. Now, although they never specifically say that it's Andy that causes the infection spread in Paris,
Yeah,
they could have
yeah.
gotten there and found, oh shit, there's infected here
Paris
now.
is not what we thought it was. Yeah.
So I mean, there is that possibility, but the way that it's
Yeah.
set up, it seems as if the infection has spread after they got there. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? Like it
yeah.
almost seems that way. So I don't know how much good this tacked on scene at the end does versus how much bad it does. Because I think effectively you could have had the movie end with that shot of Andy looking out of the helicopter with blood splattered on the window. And there's your end right there, right? It's
Yeah.
almost like the end of the 28 Days Later, where you get that freeze frame, Jim and Selena like moving forward with that momentum after they crash through the
Yeah.
gates. You
Yeah.
could have stopped that there
Could
too,
stop it
right?
there. Yeah.
Now, the ending of 28 Days Later is hopeful. The 28 Weeks Later ending is way bleak.
Yeah.
Way bleak.
I had a feeling that there was like, we are more able to command a sequel at this point, so let's leave a little drip drop here at the end
Yeah, that makes
to do
sense.
this.
That makes
That's what
sense.
I that was to me that was the reason I thought that's why they ended it this way. Whether yeah. I don't know.
So Tammy lies to Andy at the end after killing Don, who had lied to them. Andy asks her, am I infected? And she says, no, you're not. So she takes up the mantle of
Does
parents lying to their kids, right?
she know about? Yeah, they both know. They know that they're different, or they know that they are suspected of being different.
Andy, especially because of his eye
The
variation
heterochromia
stuff.
thing, yeah.
What did you call it? What's it called?
It's called heterochromia. It's when you have two different eye
Heterochromia.
colors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a very groovy mutation, as I understand it.
Do they know? That does anybody know that I can't remember how it went? Does anybody know that the mom, Alice, is the reinsertion vector of the virus?
I think we get surveillance footage of Don attacking the soldiers outside of Alice's containment area, but I don't think we get any other confirmation that anyone even suspects that that is the case.
Right, so here's my quibble with all of this stuff. Is A, I don't know what the kids understand about their mom. B, I don't know whether they think that she is the reinsertion vector. And C, the specific question that he asks her is, he doesn't say, am I infected? He says, am I one of them?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's
And
right.
in that case, the answer is no, because
True.
he's not a rage monster,
Right.
right?
So she's not technically lying to him.
Whether she was thinking about it at that level or not, I don't know. But the answer to that question is no, you're not. Because the rage people, except for the kid who says, I hate you, can't talk. You know what I mean? And he's like not trying to bite her. He's calm, relatively speaking,
The
right?
only giveaway is the eye, the whites of his
Yeah.
eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. So
That's a really good point. Am I one of them? You're right. He does ask it that way, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Shit.
So I don't know that the kids, I don't know if the kids know that their mom is the one who gave it to their dad.
Yeah.
So they may mistakenly believe that he or both of them are just plain immune. Because what the doctor says in front of them is that, like, we need to research these people because this could be the cure, right?
Right.
So they don't understand. I don't think they know Andy can pass it along.
Right. Which could be kind of dark if you think about it.
Yeah.
Like if he is the reason for the infection in Paris, if that's what they are going to set up, that he is the reason that
Yeah.
the infection spreads in Paris, how could that have happened? Right? He's what, 12? He's not out there kissing on anybody.
Yeah.
Maybe his sister gets a hold of
Yeah.
like it's maybe his tear, she's wiping his tears away and she doesn't think about
And
it,
she
except
gets
it's her face.
infected. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like did he infect Tammy and then she's not immune and she turns into a rage monster and that's it. There we go.
Yeah. That was the insidious way, I thought, was like
Yeah.
he somehow infects her because they don't realize that the heterochromia is the marker
Right.
for it, if it really is. It seems like they're saying that, but yeah.
Yeah, they really lean
And
heavily into that.
they don't know that their mom reinfected their or infected their dad.
Right.
Then you could almost see like Imogen Poots being the vector back in, or being the first rage monster that gets back into Paris, you know?
Yeah.
Because they land there and like she's started taking care of him, you know, whatever, and they share a cup of water, right? Or something like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, it could be as simple as that. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a
Yeah.
bottled water or whatever. Their his lips touched it, her
He
lips touched
goes,
it. That's it.
and he like sneezes in it or whatever. She's like, oh, who cares? It's a fucking apocalypse. Who cares? And she drinks it and she rages out, kills him, and
Right.
starts she starts the whole thing over in
Yeah.
Paris, you know.
Paris.
Ah, Paris.
Paris, je t'aime.
Je t'aime.
So that effectively is the end of the movie, though, with
Yeah,
the
yeah.
dark ending there. Do
Yeah.
you have any other notes that you wanted to throw in here before?
There's only two other things. There are two other things or one other thing.
I don't
Shoot. There was a really great cinematography set with Rose Byrne looking into the green night vision.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And they're like stepping over the bodies in the station in the metro, but
Yeah.
they don't know it because they're in completely in the dark,
Right,
right? But
right.
she's watching them and telling them. Great suspense building there. I
Yeah.
thought that was really good
Yeah, that was.
filmmaking choice there. I thought there was another good filmmaking choice too. Oh, and I don't know what it was about this, but when but in the scene where Dawn comes back into the room where she, where his wife is strapped down and she says, I love you, or whatever like that, I definitely had like my pulse was pounding in that scene too.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, whatever was done there was well done to build suspense for me in
Yeah.
that scene too.
Yeah, I think I honestly think it was the way that the actress was positioning herself. Like
Yeah.
she held herself in a way that was very, very tense.
Yeah.
Obviously she's the aggrieved one.
Yeah.
And so I, like for me personally, I tended to side more towards her. So in that
Yeah, me
scene, I'm
too.
sitting like, what is his plan? What is he going to do? I was thinking he was going to like off her or something to,
Yeah.
you know,
Protect the story or
hide,
whatever.
yeah,
Yeah.
hide his story or whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I that is definitely a good, that is definitely a good choice
Yeah.
to build that tension that way. I think there's a couple of things that I liked as far as cinematography goes, but the main one that stands out is during the firebombing of the Isle of Dogs, there is a shot of a statue that we see that is watching the carnage. The statue is of James Wolfe, who fought in the colonies and murdered a bunch of people to secure British rule over what they believed to be their sovereign land.
Oh.
So, like, we get this reflection of the firebombing of the Isle of Dogs to secure Britain again. It
Right.
reflected in the face of this bronze statue of this dude who kind of a an icon of colonization, I guess.
Also, little known
Put it that
fact,
way.
he was the world's first zombie.
Yeah,
Yeah.
totally the world's first zombie. Yep. He definitely was. So, and you can't prove me wrong because they didn't write about zombies back then.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
No.
Except me, I know because I saw it on the internet.
Yeah. Because I saw it on the History Channel and they know.
Yeah, the History Channel, the
So
internet.
they know.
It's the historychannel.net, but you know, whatever. So the History Channel dot EU. Okay, so let's do ratings. We'll do the 5-star rating deal here, and let's see where you're at with
Okay,
this.
so for me, I'm just volunteering myself first here.
Yeah, no, please.
I found that overall I enjoyed 28 Days Later more than this one. But I didn't dislike it. I just didn't feel, I just had some of those moments of, okay, what? Why do you
Yeah.
do that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, this is like one notch below 28 Days Later, which I think I gave a 3 stars, maybe
You gave it,
something like that.
you said between 2.5 and 3.
Okay, yeah, okay. So this is like one notch below that, whatever that would be for my rating there. Yeah. What about you?
So I'm in the same boat. I would say that this is a movie that I enjoy less than 28 Days Later. This is not one that I've rewatched a lot. I mean, I've rewatched 28 Days Later a lot more than I have this, which isn't to say a lot because I haven't rewatched 28 Days Later a lot, but I think I've seen this movie 3 or 4 times
Okay.
versus 5 or 6 times with
Sure.
28 Days Later. And I think the problem is for me is that it is discordant when compared to the first movie, and not in that it's like an action movie like Aliens is to Alien, but more in the fact that they kind of leave some of the lore building that went on in the first movie in the dust. And I think
Yeah.
that sits a little wrong with me. I also didn't really like the idea that Don would be hunting his kids. It doesn't make sense. And again, it's something that goes against what they've set up previously, in that the infected don't think that deep, you know. They're
Yeah.
not that deep thinkers.
Yeah.
And so for Don to turn into Jason Voorhees or the shark from Jaws,
Yeah, it's interesting.
it rings wrong.
I'm not sure what they were trying to do there because, like, if I just think about it from the standpoint of, like, in movie land, your choices, like, you get payback for your choices, right? And to me, the payback for his choice would have been
Becoming
he gets
infected.
turned into a rage monster, he kills Alice, and then somebody pops him in the head with a gun, and he's done, right? That would be like the scales would be balanced there almost. I mean, not that they have to be. Of course, you can do whatever the fuck you want in a film, but like the it just didn't it just kind of didn't ring with the rest of the zombie lore of this stuff, like you said. Yeah.
I think, like,
Yeah.
when I think about, like, in the lost episodes, we talked about the writing on, say, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, where
Yeah.
there are things that you set up and then you call back later. Even in, like, subsequent movies are called back later. They still stay true to those things. And
Yeah.
I think the fact that they try to go around stuff that was already set up kind of, it knocks it down a little bit more for me. Because they go out of their way also to pay homage to the first movie. There's a plane with contrails in the against a blue sky, like there was in the forest for Jim, right? When he
Yeah,
gets when he
yeah.
gets like when he's getting ready
Yeah,
to
yeah.
become Rage Batman or Rage Ninja. There's the gouging of the eyes thing. There's like
Yeah.
very, very there's a lot of like homage to the first movie, but they only pay homage to it. They don't obey its rules. And I think that's a problem for me. So, definitely less than the first movie. I gave the first movie 3 stars. I would give this one like 2.5, maybe.
Sure.
Because it's not a terrible movie. It is a fun watch. It's just not as good as that first one. It's not as good as the first one. So,
I hear
yeah. All right. Well, that's the end of this one. And with that, Paul, I divorce thee.
I stand here divorced.
I will remarry you when you next play Jen. Next week, we start a new season with the Planet of the Apes remakey movies, reboot movies with Rise of the Planet of the Apes. We're going to build
Oh, yeah.
towards Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which is coming out here in about 4 or 5 weeks. So we will Jen and I will be back for that one, for Rise of the Planet of the Apes, starting next week. Paul, thank you for hanging out with me while
Of
Jen could not.
course.
And I look forward to doing this again soon because
Of course.
because where else would I get Dear Justice? Where else would I get Mr. Twitter, right? The
Mr.
guy, the
Twitter.
Twitter man. So, I mean, yeah. So, and
Mama, mama, the Twitter man's coming.
tell him I retweet everything. Oh, that's going to cost a lot, ma'am. All right. Next week, we're going to monkey around on the couch. Thanks for listening, everyone.
You have been listening to A View from the Couch. Visit our new website, thecouchpod.com, where you will find a calendar of upcoming releases, links to our podcast episodes, and you can sign up for our upcoming newsletter. You can also email our host directly at view@thecouchpod.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Every review helps us get noticed. Thanks for listening.